The Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is 1:37 in the afternoon of Wednesday, February 27th. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Huggins is here, myself, Senator French, Senator Wilikowski. And we have first up CS for House Bill number 182, and its representatives are here. We had a hearing on the bill a week ago. It's a fairly straightforward bill. I think, Senator Huggins, were you, I can't remember, were you present when we discussed the bill? We heard public testimony. Is there anyone here or online who wants to testify about HB 182? Hearing and seeing none, is there a motion to move the bill? Yep. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to HB 182, I would move that we pass this bill out of committee onto the next committee of referral, along with individual recommendations and attached accompanying fiscal note.
Any discussion or opposition to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved from committee.
I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee members.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Bob. Hey, Mike.
Next up is SB 202. We have the prime sponsor here with us, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Wilikowski, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that you heard this matter on a prior committee, as did Senator McGuire. I'll try to be brief in my comments. I expect there's going to be some public comment on this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. Real ID was a piece of federal legislation that was put into effect on May 11, 2005 as part of an emergency appropriation bill. It has been described by many people as the first attempt at a national ID card in the United States. Here, I'll just quickly go through some of the things that the Real ID bill does. And our bill is a very simple bill. It just says that the state cannot use funds to implement Real ID. Going through the Real ID bill, the first section talks about what you'll need a Real ID license for, or identification card for. And essentially, you'll need it for any time you want to enter a federal facility, which would include the IRS, a courthouse, a congressional building, you go to see your senator or congressman. Anytime you enter a national park, Alaska, as we know, has probably one of the highest percentages of ownership by the federal government. I think 70% of the state of Alaska is under federal control. So I guess in theory, anywhere you go in that federal territory, you'd be required to carry your federal ID card or your real ID card. The thing that concerns a lot of people, of course, that concerns a lot of people, just the fact that you're going to have to carry around this ID card wherever you go. Anytime you enter a commercial airplane, of course, you'll have to show your ID card as well. But I think the thing that really strikes a lot of people is the provision in Real ID, which says that the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security can extend what you need to show your Real ID card for anything he or she deems to be something that should be shown for. So it's, I don't think it's much of a stretch to envision a scenario where we have people having to show their ID cards to get on Amtrak, for instance, which is a federally funded railroad. Anytime you want to go to the bank, you have to show your ID card, ID card, which I'll get to next. There will be a common machine-readable technology on the back of your card, which enables any official to swipe your card and store all of your data onto a database, which will then be shared with every other state in the country and potentially with foreign nations. Anytime you enter a bank, swipe your ID card. Anytime you enter a liquor store, potentially, show your ID card, they swipe your card. Anytime you go to a hospital, you show your ID card, they swipe your card. You can see where this leads. Now, the machine-readable technology is a requirement of Real ID. In the original proposed rules for Real ID, there was a requirement that, or a provision, that the card include RFID, which is radio frequency identification, which would then allow the federal government to basically use your card as a tracking device so that your every movement could then be monitored by the federal government. That has been removed from the proposed rule, although there's a provision in the final rule which says if states want to continue to have RFID, well, they're more than welcome to do that. Other things that have been discussed to include in this centralized database include potentially, and this is not something that is finalized, but potentially a DNA information, biometric information, fingerprint information, retinal scan information, all put on your card. Now, once all this information is on your card, then there is another requirement in Real ID to then share this information with every other state in the United States. So every other DMV official would then have access to every American's identification in one centralized database. Through treaties with Canada and Mexico that we have, whereby United States citizens can go into those countries, show their driver's license, it's very likely that we'll see an expansion so that Canadian and Mexican officials will then have access to every American's personal identification information as well. And of course, there will be private organizations that will be making a lot of money off Real ID and will be administering parts of this, and you'll have private corporations that will then have access to every Alaskan's and every American's personal data.
Senator Wilkowski, just let me reflect for the record that Senator McGuire joined us a couple of minutes ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, as far as cost goes, I guess this is one of the bigger concerns that a lot of the state government organizations have. The National Conference of State Legislatures has expressed serious concerns about. The National Governors Association has expressed serious concerns over the costs. It's expected to cost tens of billions of dollars. It's difficult to say exactly what it will cost, particularly in Alaska, because the Real ID bill requires that paper copies of everything that you bring to the DMV are kept for 7 years and images of documents be kept for 10 years. So, of course, in order to meet that mandate, we'll be required to create warehouses where we store this information. Of course, the law, Real ID law, then requires that we ensure the physical location of those locations and also the locations where driver's licenses are entered. So I think we don't know exactly what how that provision will be monitored by the federal government, but I think it's safe to assume you will have to have the federal government verify that you have a secure site. And if we look at the TSA, for instance, Transportation Security, I think it's probably safe to say we're talking about armed guards and heavy security protecting the information, and also metal detectors, which I think will probably be quite expensive. The state of Alaska has estimated it'll cost several million dollars, but I don't think we really know exactly what it will cost. And of course, the bill will require extensive changes to the hiring and retention practices for current DMV employees. Now, the law also requires that when you want to get a Real ID card, you have to go to the DMV office actually yourself. You can't renew by mail. And so, because you have to have your actual picture taken. And so this presents a unique problem, I think, for Alaska, whereas in most people in the lower 48 just hop in their car and drive to the DMV, whereas in the United States, or rather in Alaska, we have a situation where we have people who can't drive to their DMVs. We have a whole population group that lives in villages in the bush. And so since you can't fly in a plane, or it's very difficult to fly in a plane without your Real ID, the question then becomes, well, how do you get on the plane to go get your license in the first place? Or if you have children, kids, how do they get on the plane? So this is, I think, an unresolved problem. There's been concerns expressed by a number of gun owners as well, Mr. Chair. I know the Gun Owners of America have opposed Real ID, and I guess their main concern is that when you go to buy a gun, you fill out a 4473 form, you show your ID, and it's not unreasonable to assume that some president who's not very favorably inclined to guns may say, well, it's national security, we need to know who's buying guns for what. So then they simply swipe your ID card, and now you have gun registry. You're tracking every gun that you buy, you're tracking every piece of ammo that you buy.
Let me just interrupt here. And for the record, Senator Terrio just joined us. Senator Terrio, you may have gathered we're on SB 202.
Now, I guess the one thing I would like to point out is Real ID does nothing to secure our borders. Illegal immigrants in Alaska already cannot get driver's licenses. That's different than some other states. We already have provisions in place to prevent illegal aliens, illegal immigrants from getting driver's licenses here in Alaska. So from Alaska's standpoint, anyway, it's a non-issue. Now, in terms of opposition to Real ID, it's kind of an interesting mix, and I have a list which I'd be happy to hand out, Mr. Chairman. A partial list, anyway, with your indulgence. There's at least 600 organizations have opposed it, including organizations from the left, such as American, well, perceived as left, American Civil Liberties Union, but also organizations from the right, including John Birch Society, National Taxpayers Union, and a host of many, many other organizations. A number of the presidential candidates have also opposed Real ID. 18 states have passed legislation opposing Real ID, and 18 more have legislation pending to oppose Real ID. So what we're asking for in this bill, Mr. Chair, is to simply say if the federal government wishes to implement this program, then they should pay for it. And we should not, as a society, have to pay for it. Now, I know that I've received many, many comments on this, many emails, overwhelmingly in support of the bill and opposed to Real ID. I know there are some people out there who support the concept of Real ID. When I've tended to speak to those people and explain to them exactly what it does, they usually don't have such strong support for it after the conversation. But I think Alaska has typically been at the forefront in privacy rights, in liberty rights, in freedom rights, and I think we need to take a stand on this issue. And I think this is something that is truly an Alaskan issue. It's privacy. It's about freedom. And I think Alaska should join the groups of organizations and states that have opposed this and take a stand on this issue, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. For the information of the committee, we have two folks here or online who are available to answer questions. Kevin Brooks is here from the Department of Administration. Also online is Krista Stearns from the Department of Law. So as we progress through the hearing, if you have questions for either one of those two folks, just go ahead and pose them. Any questions for Senator Wilkowski or the other witnesses? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, just for the administration, are they in support of this bill?
Mr. Brooks, can you come forward? And put yourself on the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Kevin Brooks. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. Through the Chair and Senator Huggins, I guess could best characterize the administration's position as concern about the broad language of the bill. We've talked some with the sponsor, and really it gets to the point of many of the things that we're doing now for the Alaska driver's license could be deemed Real ID compliant, and we don't want to do anything that would jeopardize the good business practices, really, of some of the things that the DMV is doing for, you know, and there's a long list of requirements of the bill, or of the Real ID Act. So we share the concerns. So I think there's a lot of common concern about data being shared and making, you know, and whether those are secure databases or whether we should even be doing them. There is certainly a lot of public debate that needs to occur on Real ID. I know the governor was very recently in the past week at the NGA, National Governors Association, and I think overwhelmingly the group was very outspoken that anything the federal government is going to mandate in this area, they should be paying for it. And so I think, again, there's very much common ground. I would gauge, you know, our concern is really we don't want to jeopardize the good things that we're doing at the DMV. And just a short list are, you know, a digital driver's license with a digital photo on there instead of the old Polaroid, that's a Real ID compliant factor. We do fraud training, things like that. So there's many things we're doing that are good things. There's things that are contemplated under the Real ID Act that we have concerns about, the monetary cost, the policy implications of whether we should be doing them at all. So
that answers your question, Senator Huggins. Senator Terrio.
Well, I'm supportive of the bill, but I'm wondering if Senator Wilkowski has a response to the issue of some things that the state perhaps was doing before the passage of Real ID. If the bill would allow us to continue to do those, not in lockstep or necessarily in conjunction with the federal act, but just as the state of Alaska.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the big issues, which I failed to talk about, was state sovereignty. And this is a real concern to many people. We've never had the federal government tell us how to deal with driver's licenses, never in the history of our nation. And so we're really getting into a 10th Amendment area, states' rights issue. States have the right to secure their driver's licenses. And I think that is a fundamental right, and it's something that we should be concerned about, and that we should be concerned about having secure driver's licenses, and that we're not issuing counterfeit driver's licenses. I don't think anyone supports that. My main concern with this whole issue is I'm really concerned about, number one, creating a large federal database that exposes us to the weaknesses of any other database in the United States. That's number one. People in small communities, in small states, everyone will have access to all Alaskans' data, and that concerns me. The ability of the imposition of the costs concerns me. The fact that we'll be potentially sharing this information with foreign governments concerns me. The fact that there'll be this wholesale collection of very potentially personal information concerns me. The fact that we'll be tracking people's movements concerns me. And so I have no problem with the state of Alaska trying to have secure driver's licenses. I support that. I guess my main concern is, you know, where do we go with the surveillance and the potential for the invasion of privacy? We just passed an identity theft bill today on the other body, and I think Alaskans are very concerned about that issue. 10 million Americans lose their identity every year. This is opening that wide up for identity theft. So that those are the issues that I'm mainly concerned with.
Senator Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm trying to get at is if one of those issues that the state decided to do independent of any kind of federal directive happens to coincide with a directive of the federal legislation, would this particular wording preclude us from continuing to do that as a state and exercise that sovereignty?
I don't think it would. Okay. I don't think it would. If there are things that the state wants to do with the digital pictures, we're already doing that. I don't have a problem with that, for instance.
And have you had any debate with or discussion with the drafters in a way to clarify in the language that's permissible? Or in the previous committee, was there discussion on this point of how to make sure that we get to what you want to do, but still allow the state to exercise its sovereignty and not be limited by the things that the federal government would also try to have us do?
We did have a discussion on that. The committee looked at this very thoroughly, I thought. And I think what the committee essentially, what I heard from some of the committee members was, you can tell the things that are headed towards Real ID. For instance, things that we would be doing in the bill that would require us to tie up with other databases. Clearly that's Real ID. I think it's good to have the discussion on it. I guess I'd like, you know, I'd certainly be happy to sit down and work with DMV on this.
And Mr. Chairman, one last question.
Senator,
I think in your testimony, Senator, you talked about the expenditure of state funds, but the wording says expend funds. So if there are federal funds that come through, would the state agency be able to expend those funds if they're not general fund or mental health trust? You know, anything that the state is really a state source would be precluded, but what about any other source, non-state source of funds?
What I've heard from people is we didn't go far enough with our bill. What I've heard from many people, and I think you're probably going to hear it in the testimony today, is They don't want real ID, period. And so I would submit that we interpret that and that the intent is to interpret that, that no funds be expended, period. Mm-hmm. I know that a number of states have taken that position. And if enough states take that position, then the federal government is going to have a very difficult time forcing this on us.
And Mr. Chairman, I think maybe that's something the committee needs to consider. I mean, certainly, if the federal government came and said, tell you what, we'll pay for it 100%, but we want you to implement it, would we be any less bothered by that? I would think not. So, thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Brooks, has the administration worked up any estimates for what it would cost to implement the Federal Real ID Act?
Mr. Chairman, we've actually been looking at that since the final rules were published in January, trying to determine what exactly would it cost the state to comply. And there's many different aspects. One is that we have not been able to cost yet are things like background checks for our employees. That's one of the things. And we do that for other state employees now. Maybe it's correctional officers or troopers or things like that where background checks occur. They don't currently occur for people who work at the DMV. So there'd be an added cost there. There's costs for fraud training where we'd send our employees. But we do some of that now already. And you know, again, that's one of those good business practices that I think we want to do whether there's a Real ID Act or not. The other big unknown is, because the rules aren't completely clear, is what would it take to secure our facilities? Does that contemplate an armed guard? Does it contemplate metal detectors? You know, what does that really mean? And we don't have clear direction, and so it is difficult to cost. But we're trying to put those costs together. I don't have a good number for you at this point in time.
Any way to ballpark it? I mean, is it 50 million or less, 100 million or more? I mean,
less than that. I don't know if we have Whitney Brewster, our DMV director, online.
She is online.
We've done some preliminary cost estimates. She may be able to help me out on that.
Why don't we turn to her? Ms. Brewster, can you hear me? Are you on the line?
My name is Whitney Brewster. I'm the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. The ballpark estimate that we're looking at just for the DMV, there are other affected agencies, but we're looking at approximately $2 million at this point.
And just so I'm clear, that would be to make DMV compliant with the Federal Real ID Act.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Would that be $2 million? Would that be an ongoing number for operations every year, or is that a sort of a capital expenditure?
Mr. Chairman, that would be a capital expenditure, but there would be ongoing funds needed. And I'm sorry, I just don't have those numbers at this time. Like Mr. Brooks referred to, we just got the final rule last month. It's a 284-page document, and we are sorting through it and working with other agencies to see what it would take to comply with the Federal Real ID Act.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things,
Mr. Brooks,
if I may, we did put on the record in the last committee was that whether this bill passed or not, we would be back to the legislature for approval of funding, whether that's state general funds or receipt of federal funds. We don't have the money in our budget to fully comply. And I guess that's where the ambiguity really exists. We have money in the budget now. We have about a $13 million annual operating budget for the DMV, and we're doing many things with that money that on face comply with the Real ID Act, but to fully comply, to do all the things, the data sharing and all these things that are contemplated, we don't have the funding to do that. We would be necessarily back before this body and the governor's office before to get a funding request in to pay for it. So as it currently stands, the state of Alaska can't comply without additional funding. And coming to terms with how much that is and whether we should be doing it and all of those things are the topic for ongoing discussion and debate.
It is an interesting issue, and it's, I mean, as you look at the language of the bill we have in front of us, you know, I sort of wonder, you know, if we're giving sufficient direction to a judge who would ultimately be trying to decide whether some commissioner had, in essence, broken the law. because you can, it's fairly easy to foresee a circumstance in which, you know, you pass this law and then, you know, DMV takes some further step to, you know, strengthen the integrity of the driver's license, and someone steps forward and says, this is complying with Real ID. And DMV says, no, it's just making the driver's license more secure. And suddenly a judge has to look at this statute and figure out what to do, because that person's going to drag that DMV director into court and say, you know, this person's breaking this law, and judge, you have to decide. And I think we need to be, I think we need to give the judge good clear work direction, or at least if we're doing our jobs right, we have to do that, and you know, give him or her the statutory, you know, sort of command as to how to decide a case like that. And you know, we've articulated in the last committee, Senator Taro's brought it up, and it's on my mind as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Brewster, did you have any, you're signed up to testify. Were there other matters you wanted to bring to our attention while we've got you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there are a couple of other things. Again, for the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the DMV. I just wanted to let the committee know where we are currently on Real ID and what we're looking at. Effective May 11th of 2008, federal agencies cannot accept driver's licenses or ID cards for official purposes unless a state has requested an extension of compliance through the Department of Homeland Security. Alaska has sought that extension, and it's important to note that seeking that extension in no way implies that we intend to comply with the federal act. It just simply states that we need more time. It buys us more time. There are only three states that have not sought an extension. Like I said, we have sought an extension, and we have been granted that extension.
Ms. Brewster, let me just
say, Ms. Brewster, of issuing driver's licenses and IDs and with minimal impact on Alaskans through December 31 of 2009, and that's when the initial extension will expire.
Ms. Brewster, can you tell me whether the states that have not sought extensions, are they sort of in open defiance, or are they going towards cooperation? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I know that Montana is one of those states. I believe that Maine is another one, and South Carolina is the third one. I know that Montana has objected to complying with the Real ID Act.
Thank you.
But there are other states who have passed legislation indicating that they do not want to use funds to comply with Real ID. They have passed that legislation, but they've also sought the extension. So I know that there are three right now that have not sought an extension, and therefore they have not been granted that. All other states have sought and received those extensions. So by October 11th, 2009, we will have to, if we are to seek a second extension, at that time we will have to show that we are materially compliant with the Real ID Act.
And I'm sorry, what was
and
the
And there are 18 benchmarks that we would be required to meet. And right now we meet approximately five of them. I also wanted to, Deputy Commissioner Brooks indicated, the National Governors Association just wrapped up their winter meeting where Real ID was a prominent topic, and the governors at that meeting did unanimously vote to inform congressional leaders that the NGA wanted Congress to fully fund the Real ID Act and appropriate $4 billion, which is the estimated cost of implementing Real ID, over the next 10 years. And they would seek a substantial chunk of that figure for FY09 formula grants to the states. Currently, there is only $80 million available to all states. The state of Alaska has not requested federal grant funds. And our main concern at this time is that we would be prohibited from doing things here at the DMV that are just good business practices. And we want to be able to improve and do the things to secure our driver's licenses. But we have some concerns that we may not be able to do that if this legislation passes as it is currently written. And I've reviewed the Real ID Act. I've reviewed the final rule. I'd be happy to share some of the things that I understand that the Act and the final rule indicate that we would be required to do. And I'd be happy to talk about the things that we're currently doing if it would be useful to the committee.
Senator Terrio has a question.
Thank you. Could you repeat? You said the state of Alaska currently meets five of a certain number of requirements of Real ID. Was that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that is correct. Five of 18.
18. Okay. Thank you.
And my question, Ms. Brewster, is how many, in the normal course of business, absent the federal Real ID Act, how many more of those would you be working to comply with, you know, sort of in the normal course of your keeping our driver's licenses up to date?
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of things that come to mind. SB 215, Senator Huggins' bill, the legal presence bill, that bill is working its way through the legislature as we speak, as well as HB 3, which is the companion bill, Representative Lynn's bill. Legal presence is one of the requirements for Real ID. Those two pieces of legislation do require a programming change, which would be a cost to the DMV. It's my understanding that the way that SB 202 is written, that we would not be able to make those changes within our database to be able to have a driver's license expire when someone is legally in the country, or no longer legally in the country, I should say. Also, one of the requirements of Real ID is that a physical residence address be printed on a driver's license. Right now, the DMV prints the mailing address on the driver's license. We do collect the information on physical residence address, but we do not print it on the driver's license. It's my understanding that is very beneficial to law enforcement to have that physical residence address versus a mailing address on the actual license. That may be something that the DMV would look at.
Further questions for Ms. Brewster? I don't see any. Ms. Brewster, thank you. If you could stand by, I can imagine that there may be a question that pops up for you during the course of the hearing.
Yes, sir.
We do have several people lined up to testify. We have Krista Stearns, as I mentioned, who's on the line to answer questions. Mr. Brooks is here. Ms. Brewster on the line. And let's turn to public testimony. We've got seven people signed up to testify. And let's begin on the off nets with Jim Harrison. Mr. Harrison, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm right here, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Harrison, go ahead and put your name on the record. Go ahead and give us your testimony. If you could keep your remarks to 2 or 3 minutes, that'd be useful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jim Harrison. I'm an attorney licensed to practice in the state of Alaska. I have a pretty good familiarity with Real ID, and there's a couple points I'd like to make here. First of all, the benchmarks that Director pointed out are actually included in the Real ID Act Appendix A. There's 18 different hurdles that the states have to comply with. It's on page 283 and 284 of the actual final rules. So if you guys are looking for guidance as to which of the five of the 18, perhaps the DMV could talk to that they already comply with. Quickly, a few points. The Real ID, while there is an extension of time to comply until 2009, the Real ID requires that everybody under the age of 50 by 2014, December of 2014, have in their hand a Real ID compliant driver's license or ID. Yeah, the driver's licenses that aren't Real ID compliant won't be accepted for government purposes, like getting on planes or into federal buildings. There is a 5-year cycle of renewal of driver's licenses in Alaska, and to have everybody in Alaska have in their hand by that date, they're going to have to start issuing the compliant driver's licenses 5 years before 2014, so at the end of 2009. So the point I'm trying to make here is while there is an extension of time to comply, the states actually have only until the end of 2009 to ramp up to issue Real ID compliant driver's licenses, and that's something to consider. In the testimony before, it was talked to that this is a first rule attempt to Real ID. Actually, it's not. This first rule attempt to a national driver's license, it's not the failed repeatedly. And in fact, this piece of legislation was put forward by Representative Sensenbrenner, Senator Sensenbrenner, and it failed on its own and was only able to pass it when it was put into a must-pass guns and butter funding bill at the last minute and was passed without debate. So they tried to do it before with debate, and it failed, and here they did it without debate, and it got snuck through. That's pretty much all I have to say. Thank you for letting me testify.
Mr. Harrison, thanks you. Thank you. Next up is Bill Scannell. Mr. Scannell, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. This is Bill Scannell. I have testified across the country in a number of state legislatures against Real ID, and here to speak to this piece of legislation, and I'm strongly in favor of it. A couple of quick points. Listening to Whitney Brewster and the other gentleman from the Department of Administration, I think something that has not been made clear is that both of them are not civil servants. These are political appointees, both of whom, to the best of my knowledge, are in favor of Real ID, just as Dwayne Bannock was strongly in favor of Real ID, and he did his best to wiggle and worm around the current state of DMV affairs, while at the same time pushing legislation along the lines of HB 3, was strongly in favor of Real ID. Whitney Brewster, again, to the best of my knowledge, is a Real ID proponent, despite the fact that Governor Palin has made it clear that she has problems with it. And in fact, when talking to my dear friend Scott McMurrin of Alaska Travelgram fame, said, "I am not interested in having the mark of the beast." That was the way she saw it. Despite that fact, we have two political appointees who are pushing Real ID. The second thing I'd like to just toss into this mix is a discussion I had with Dwayne Bannock a couple of years ago when he was busy trying to change from the Polaroid photos to the digital photos, and he was very proud of having digital photos because they were so much more secure. And he said to me, he said, "Bill, do you know that we used to keep photographs of all of Alaska residents who had driver's licenses? We used to keep them in card catalogs over at the state troopers' barracks. Can you believe that? How horrible that is. You know, now we have them as digital files and, you know, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Well, Dwayne, that's a lot less secure than Polaroid pictures." And he says, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, if somebody wanted to steal Alaskans' identities before you switched over to this, they'd have to fly to Alaska and break into a state police barracks and then break into a secure room and get a hold of these things." I said, "Now they can be sitting anywhere in the world and break in and steal Alaskans' photographs. What Real ID would make that situation 10 times worse by not only mandating but facilitating the free transfer of not only people's digital photographs, but the original documents, birth certificates and whatnot, true digital copies of those things, putting them up on the internet for the lowest level DMV worker sitting on the Tijuana border to be able to get access to." That's all I really have to say.
Mr. Scannell, you've been active in this issue, and I guess I have a question for you. And the question
Sure.
You've heard the discussion about sort of distinguishing between what DMV may do in the normal course of its operations that make driver's licenses more secure, less tamper, more tamper resistant, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Would I guess what I'm asking is whether you would oppose language in this bill that allowed them to continue making those efforts while still maintaining sort of a wall, if you will, with complying with those aspects of the Real ID bill that many of us find troubling.
Well, as an Alaskan, it's important, through the chair, as an Alaskan, it's important to me that we make our own decisions, even if I might not personally agree with moves that the administration or the DMV are taking vis-a-vis our driver's licenses. If they're really our own decisions as Alaskans, then that's okay. But the point that I was trying to initially make is that I'm not sure if we're all hearing from good faith partners here, because if we have Whitney Brewster trying to come across to this committee and to others as some sort of neutral broker, just the facts, just trying to keep the trains running on time, civil servant approach, when that simply isn't the truth, then I have a problem with that.
I understand that you may have some difference with the current administration, but there'll be another administration and another administration after that.
Sure, and that's why it's important that we as Alaskans make our own decisions. So right. If it's a matter of us making decisions regarding our own driver's licenses, that's fine. What I truly oppose is this being mandated from outside.
Right, and just so you know, the what we're wrestling with is what happens when those two things happen to coincide. When what's mandated from outside is also something that we arrive at independently and decide for ourselves is a good idea, when those two coincide, then you're going to have a legal trouble distinguishing whether it's complying with Real ID or whether it's simply a good idea with respect to your driver's license.
I think, as Mr. Harrison pointed out, that there are some very, very clear points that would make absolutely no sense in terms of any security decisions we as Alaskans would want to make vis-a-vis our driver's licenses that would make us real ID compliant. The one that immediately comes to mind has to do with having the photographs taken first. That would be a clear sign that DMV was attempting to be real ID compliant. Under Homeland Security's final rules, it states in there that the first thing that happens when you walk into the DMV is that they take a picture of you.
Interesting. Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
We're turning now to Fairbanks, where we've got a handful of folks signed up to testify there, and the first one on the list is Mr. Frank Turney. Turney, can you hear my voice?
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're coming across now. If you'd put your name on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony. Like the others, I'll ask you to keep your remarks.
Frank Turney here, Fairbanks, Alaska, Chairman Hollis and Senators of the Judiciary. Senators, regarding this so-called ID Act that was passed in 2005, the people and the citizens of the United States, and that includes Alaskans, were hoodwinked by this vicious attack upon the Fourth Amendment, the right to the people to be secure in their papers, and effects against unreasonable seizures and seizures search shall not be violated. We were hoodwinked when the invasion upon our right to privacy under the Fourth Amendment was attached to a bill providing storm-related relief and military appropriations bill and passed with little debate and no hearings. They engaged and ignored our Fourth Amendment rights. I support this bill to halt any funding, and that includes no funding from the federal government for any other source. And I request that you amend this bill. After Montana, Montana was the first state to adopt legislation rejecting a federal law requiring states, and Governor Schweitzer of the great state of Montana has taken bold steps to encourage other states to band together and pass laws rejecting federal government requirements of the so-called Real ID Act of 2005. I have requested myself, Governor Sarah Palin, to take a stand on our Fourth Amendment right and exercise our 10th Amendment right versus the federal government and just say no. Now, 24 experts in privacy and technology have submitted detailed comments explaining many privacy and security threats of the ID Act and only increased ID theft among citizens. I would like to include also in the state of Alaska, I'd like to include Senator Wilaszkowski has copies of three elected bodies here in the interior that have passed resolutions, and I hope the judiciary has copies of it. If not, then I hope that he passes them on to you against this so-called Real ID Act in 2007. Fairbanks City Councilman Lloyd Hilly and the City Council passed a resolution against the so-called Real ID Act, encouraged legislation. Also, Charlie Rex, Borough Assembly, former Borough Assembly, and North Star Borough Assembly passed a resolution opposing the act. And also, the mayor of the North Pole and the city council also oppose this Real ID Act. So there are three people here that are elected officials who were sworn to an oath to uphold the Constitution, Alaska's Constitution. And I hope you can do the same. And senators, I heard that word, the mark of the beast. And believe me, if this is passed, this is the mark of the beast. And you were sworn to an oath to uphold the Constitution, and I hope you can obey by that. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney. Next up is John Bradius. Mr. Bradius, are you there?
Hello, John Brading here. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I support SB 202, but request an amendment to say Alaska State rejects the federal Real ID Act completely for violating the U.S. Constitution and Alaska Constitution. This Real ID Act, if implemented, will create a vicious government vehicle dedicated to robbing and abusing the citizens' freedoms. This is an instrument of totalitarianism that manipulates the people into servitude, an instrument to control human freedom. Without the freedom of choice to travel, uninhibited, no matter what conveyance of choice, is a loss of liberty. A database of information on each citizen is an illegal invasion of privacy, violating the Fourth Amendment. Information predator hackers can buy for $100 on the internet plans to build an ID card microchip reader for private information, banking, medical, etc. This will become an identity theft free-for-all. Go to antichips.com for more information on that. This type of 24/7 surveillance just leads right into the next step of a police state. Stop this continued assault on freedom. Time to take a stand. Please go to antichips.com for the truth. Thank you.
Mr. Brady, thank you. Next up is Brent Ritchie from Fairbanks. Mr. Ritchie, are you there?
Yes, I am. My name is Brent Ritchie. I'm live in Fairbanks. I'd just like to echo many things that have been said already. I'm basically in favor of Senate Bill 202, mostly because I don't believe that the state should be paying for legislation that the feds passed and didn't fund themselves. I don't think that we are represented when that was passed, and I don't think we were responsible for to pay and implement that the Federal ID Act. Aside from the bill itself, I'm in the group that was basically I don't agree with the Real ID period as well, whether it's federally funded or funded by the state. I think it is an infringement on our Fourth Amendment rights and the privacy of U.S. citizens. And I hope that you do abide by the Constitution, and whether Senate Bill 202 is passed or not, I don't believe that the Real ID Act should be implemented in the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Next up is Larry Smith. Mr. Smith, are you there?
Yes, thank you. I got it. One of my main concerns, of course, is the Mark of the Beast, too, because they're talking about DNA and all this other stuff that might come along, and then there's going to be identity theft, I believe, is going to happen. And then once the identity theft starts, then they're going to try to put this chip inside you somehow so that they can say, well, we'll do away with all this if you just do this. And another problem I believe is going to happen, too, is in the Homeland Security, I think it's really ridiculous to do this, because if they know where everybody's gun is, if we ever get invaded and somebody ever gets a hold of this information, they're going to know where every single gun is in this country. And I think that's the only reason to this date that we have never been invaded. And I think other countries having our information is really crazy. You know, if Americans wanted other countries to have their information, I think we should just, with this real ID, why don't we just give them our bank accounts and everything else, because that's what they're going to end up with anyways. I guess that's all I have to say. And I would like to thank Mr. French and Mr. Wildkowski, I think is how you pronounce it, for introducing this bill to begin with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next up is Marty Cox.
My name is Marty Cox. I am representing myself today, as well as my husband, Schaefer, who was with you just a few hours ago. Mr. Chair, I support Senate Bill 202 and all other opposition to the Real ID Act. The benefits to security are minuscule and easily eclipsed by the almost certain abuses this system would facilitate. Our nation was built upon freedom. Our prosperity is the result of freedom. I do not want to see that freedom eroded by unconstitutional intrusions such as the Real ID Act. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, thank you for sponsoring Senate Bill 202. I am a Republican and believe that our founding fathers did a wise thing when they wrote the Fourth Amendment. Through the chair, I would respectfully ask my fellow Republicans, Senator Huggins, Senator McGuire, and Senator Terrio, to defer to the wisdom of our founding fathers when casting your vote. America is the last ditch for freedom, and you five are in that ditch.
Ms. Cox, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else there in Fairbanks that wanted to testify on the bill? Is there anybody here in the room that would like to testify about SB 202? At this point, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on SB 202. Senator Wilkowski, any wrap-up remarks you want to make on the bill?
No. Just a couple real quick ones, Mr. Chair. The testimony that I've heard in this committee and in the previous committee is that we didn't go far enough. And I'm open to that. If people, and I've talked to other senators, quite frankly, and they've expressed the same concern that even if the federal government does pay for this, we don't want it. Now, Senator Terrio pointed out an interesting point in the bill, and that is that the way it was written was all talks about all funds. So I think the way it is written, and perhaps we want to get a legal opinion on this, we could exclude federal funds as well and thereby just say flat out we're not accepting Real ID, which is I think what many of the testifiers had to say, and quite frankly is what many of the people who've written me and called my office have said. So I would be open to that, or at least the discussion on that. As far as the how we deal with what DMV is doing, I think it was Senator McGuire who said it best in the last committee. We're not trying to get in the way of the best business practices of the DMV. If it is truly in the best business practices of the DMV to change a certain aspect of how we're creating our own sovereign driver's licenses, I don't think anyone opposes that. Or we may have some disputes, but as a state, we should be able to decide that on our own. I think what people are opposed to, and what I'm opposed to, is the sharing of this information and just the fact that this is being mandated on us in really an unconstitutional way.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. With that, we'll set the bill aside and bring up next SB 185, also by Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chairman, just on that issue, do you intend to perhaps get a memo or something from the drafter that speaks to some of these issues, that how broadly they think the court would interpret the language the way it is? And some of my confusion, which prompted the question that I asked, was that I read this to prohibit the use of any funds, but yet when Senator Wilkowski was making his statements, he spoke of state funds, so just getting that clarified. And maybe the drafter would have a suggestion on language that would allow, make it clear that the state can make its own sovereign decisions, and if one happens to coincide with something in the federal act, it wouldn't specifically be precluded. But
So what I'm thinking for is something along the lines of the so-called but-for test. Right. Yeah. Would you take this step but for the federal Real ID Act? You know, and if the DMV in its wisdom decides that they need to, you know, put different corners or different, you know, insignia on a driver's license to make it secure, and that holds up, then that strikes me as being reasonable. If they're taking steps to bring us into conformity with the federal Real ID Act, I think we're all saying don't spend our money on that.
Okay, thank you.
So on to SB 185. Senator Wilikowski.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. SB 105 is a bill that will keep Alaska in the forefront on the battle against sexual predators. Currently, convicted sexual predators are required to register their home addresses. This would require them to register email addresses and other electronic identifiers. I guess the concern here is you could have, we hear these stories all the time. In fact, we just had a testimony from a national renowned expert, Flint Waters, who came, gave a stunning piece of testimony. I think, I don't think anyone was in that, who was in that room wasn't moved tremendously by just the staggering things that he had to say. This is a real problem out there. Alaska has one of the highest uses of internet in the country, and that's a good thing. One of the unfortunate things is, because of that high use, we also have there also is the potential for internet predation by sex abusers. And in talking to some public safety officials after that hearing, there's estimated to be 16,000 sexual predators prowling on the internet now. This bill will give law enforcement a powerful tool to keep track of the activities of convicted sexual predators and to catch and punish them when they do break the law, whether it be by seeking out new victims or simply by not complying with the law. There are currently three states that require sex offenders to provide law enforcement with their email addresses, and more than a dozen have legislation in the works. This bill has the support of Public Safety Department of Alaska. We've worked very closely with them in making sure this language is correct, and I don't think they've changed their mind in the last couple weeks. He's shaking your head now. Police departments throughout the state, the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, Victims for Justice, and their Surviving Parents Coalition. I think this is a common sense bill that will help keep our children safer, Mr. Chairman, and I would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Any questions for the bill sponsor? We have four folks signed up to testify. Let's start with the law enforcement community. Sergeant Ron Tidler should be on the line. Sergeant Tidler, are you there?
I am.
If you go ahead and put your name on the record, give us your testimony, we'd be happy to hear it.
Okay. It's Detective Sergeant Ron Tidler with the Anchorage Police Department Cyber Crimes Unit and also the commander for the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force.
You can go ahead.
As far as the testimony, Mr. Chair, it appears that the corrections have been made that I had addressed my concerns earlier on the first version of this, and again, on behalf of the task force, I just want to throw my support behind this.
Sergeant Tidler, maybe you can give us, give us some idea about your day-to-day job and duties, and maybe give us some view of what the Anchorage Police Department is doing with respect to internet sex predators.
Yes, sir. We currently have we've organized a task force throughout the state involving several agencies, including immigrations, state troopers, FBI, Anchorage Police Department, and other state agencies and local agencies to combat this problem of internet crimes against children. Using a variety of tools, some of the tools that were presented to the members down there from Flint Waters, we are able to identify computers out there that have child pornography on them, and we are able to go apply for search warrants and administrative subpoenas on records that will help us lock into where these computers are located, and then through our forensic examination, once these computers are seized, we're able to identify the individuals that are participating in this activity and charge them with the appropriate crimes, whether they are the possession of child pornography or the distribution of child pornography, which is a more serious level there. In some of these cases, nationally, we're able to find actual victims that are being preyed upon by these predators, and during the assault, the offenders will take images of their victims and then trade them on the internet with other offenders. There's been several well-documented cases throughout the country of actual victims being rescued as a result of these efforts. Additionally, it has been shown that between 40% to 80% of the subjects involved in this activity have already had some form of sexual contact with a child, and we believe that any tool that is given to us to fight this effort is going to be well worth it.
Sergeant, thank you. Any questions for Sergeant Tidler while we have him on the line? I don't hear or see any. Thank you again. Next up is Tayton Meredith from the Fairbanks Police. Officer Meredith, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
If you go ahead and give us state your name for the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Yes, sir. My name is Detective Peyton Meredith. I'm a detective with the Fairbanks Police Department.
Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the committee. The Fairbanks Police Department is a member of the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. One of my duties as a detective with the Fairbanks Police Department, as well as investigating other cases, is to investigate crimes related to children. Mostly the cases I work are possession and distribution of child pornography cases. I'm speaking on behalf of the administration of the Fairbanks Police Department in support of this bill. In my experience working these cases as a detective with the Fairbanks Police Department, I've run across a lot of the suspects that I work in these child pornography cases either are registered sex offenders, or, more importantly, after they are arrested on these possession cases or distribution cases, one of the requirements generally is them to register as a sex offender in the state of Alaska. So they're going to be sex offenders, and they're going to be registered sex offenders for a long period of time. And, of course, we all know that the rate of recidivism for those offenders is quite high. So having access to knowing email address and other internet identifiers are certainly aid law enforcement in basically catching these predators again if they get back online and start preying on these children. The Fairbanks Police Department supports any bill related to this that would require the sex offenders to register this information. I'm also aware that Chief Dan Hoffman has also written in support of House Bill 278, which I believe, which I haven't reviewed, but I believe is similar in language to this bill as well. I'd also like to say, working with the Alaska Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, this is the first opportunity I've had to speak with any member of the legislature about topics of this. The people working in this community in the state of Alaska, the state agencies and all the city agencies and the federal agencies are really good at what they do, and I think the state of Alaska should be proud of the law enforcement officers that they have working on this problem in the state. There's some real knowledgeable and some great officers out there working on this problem, making a lot of arrests and really trying to put a dent in the problem that we have here.
Detective Meredith, thank you. In a way, when you look at the bill, it almost seems like a cleanup measure. It almost seems like just another way of registering a sex offender's address. It's no more sort of revolutionary than simply saying, you need to tell us, where you live, where you get your mail. Oh, and tell us your email address that you may be using as well.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And as well as your email address, I mean, any other identifiers, any organizations or websites that they belong to, anything that they can be identified with on the internet would be great aid to law enforcement, because there certainly are law enforcement techniques that once we have that information, we can go check and we can become aware if they are using that information to prey upon children again. So absolutely, it'd be no more difficult for them than just providing their address to their probation officer or whoever they have to check in with. Absolutely.
Detective, thank you. Questions for the detective? I have one from Senator Terrio.
Yes, sir, Mr. Terrio.
Thanks, either for this witness or the prime sponsor. The issue of the email addresses, are they then just available to anybody that wants to go and check the registry? And a concern that my staff just highlighted for me is whether we provide a mechanism for sex offenders to all communicate amongst themselves.
Mr. Chair, we had an extensive discussion about this issue during the previous committee hearing. And what we decided on was, and this was, I guess, a real point of contention with law enforcement, we didn't want just a large list that anyone could go and look at the list. And the concern was from the experts that if you had this large list, it would enable those people who abuse children who collect child pornography to really just all figure out who they all are and communicate with one another and share information with one another. So they thought that would be very dangerous. What we did instead was we have a publicly available database where you can type in the name of the if your child is communicating with someone, you type in the name of the email address or the internet identifier, and it'll tell you whether or not that person is registered. And I guess I should mention, and this was a point of discussion in on the bill, on page 3 in lines 21 through 25, we talk about how we're actually going to administer this, and it says there's a federal program that we're expecting will start up this summer. And so this should be free, and it's a federal program. It will be a computer database that will be available, we're hoping, to all the states. That's what every indication that we have tells us. And so we're hoping that that will be provided to the state of Alaska at no cost, and that is what we're being told is will be done.
And we'll accept that federal money?
We will accept that. Yes, we will, Mr. Chair.
Detective Meredith, thank you. I think that's all the questions we had for you, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Next up to testify is Ms. Karen Foster. Ms. Foster, are you on the line?
I am.
If you go ahead and give us your name for the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Karen Foster. My 18-year-old daughter, Bonnie Craig, was brutally raped and murdered September of 1994. In her honor, I am dedicating my life to help balance the scales of justice and to protect our children. The pain of losing a child to a violent death is something that no one can understand. It will, however, give you strength and passion that most will never feel. My passion is to ensure that no other parent will have to go through such hell. Not one more child should have to go through rape and torture. Not one more child should die. We have to make the changes now. I was in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago trying to get a bill passed that would provide the funding for federal, state, and local agencies to help catch child internet predators. It was to get the funding for the ICAC task that several others have already mentioned. It was truly an eye-opening experience. I learned that there are more than 570 sexual predators in the U.S., I learned that more than 50% of child pornography worldwide is being produced and distributed right here in the U.S. Law enforcement is being overwhelmed. I was also introduced to Flint Waters, the special agent who works with the State of Wyoming Division of Criminal Investigation, Internet Crimes. He also came to Juneau the following week, and I sure hope most of you saw him. He does an amazing live demonstration for senators and their staff. The demonstration of his program showed that within 30 seconds, the number of people downloading illegal child pornography with today's technology and his program that he offers free to the law enforcement departments throughout the world, he can identify these computers that are downloading pornography. He can pull up the titles of the files on these computers, the files that they have downloaded and that they are sharing. With the unique computer identifier, it gives law enforcement evidence that will, in most cases, allow a trial to be prosecuted without a child victim ever having to testify. Prosecution in these cases has been incredibly successful, a 96% rate. Having the unique identifier of someone who has already been convicted of a sex crime will allow law enforcement an incredible tool that will, within a couple pushes of a button, let law enforcement know if there is anything illegal on their computers. Waters, in his demonstration, pulled up Alaska at my request. At that moment in time, there were 1,428 internet communication identifiers downloading illegal child porn. We're not talking about pictures of nude boys or babies. We're talking about unspeakable acts that a father does to his two-year-old girl on the changing table. The titles of these files will offend you. They will horrify you. We are talking about crime scene videos, and we know where these people are. Currently, in Alaska, the ICAC task force only have a few officers to handle tracking down those leads. That's 1,428 leads that these few officers have to deal with. A Department of Justice study shows that currently only 2% of those crimes are being investigated. Furthermore, 30% of those 1,428 leads will have a child victim in their home. That means that there are more than 428 Alaskan children waiting to be rescued by these officers. We know the locations of these victims. This bill, by requiring these email addresses and unique identification numbers, will provide detailed information and, more importantly, evidence to help prosecute at the touch of a button. That will give officers more time to rescue victims. Law enforcement officers should be given every tool possible to do that and to do their job. In looking at the fiscal notes, it is noted that the bill will not have a fiscal impact on the Public Defender's Office or the Department of Law. I would argue that it most definitely will. It will have a positive impact. Prosecution time and investigation time will be significantly reduced. There should be a savings. Please, I urge you to support this bill. We should not have to make the job of protecting our children, our families, and our communities from convicted sex offenders harder for law enforcement. The tools and the technology are there. For God's sakes, and for our children's sakes, please put all politics aside and do the right thing for our state. If there is anything that is causing concerns for passing this bill, I would like to hear from any of the persons present why they would not vote in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Ms. Foster, thank you for your statement. Next up is Susan Sullivan from Victims for Justice. Ms. Sullivan, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
You go ahead and give us your name. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
I'm Susan Sullivan. I'm the Executive Director of Victims for Justice.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Victims for Justice is in support of including internet information identification to the information that's available currently on sex offenders and kidnappers. We recognize that this will assist in investigating and preventing internet crime. It also will provide peace of mind to previous victims and their families to know that these tools are available to prevent revictimization. Mr. Chairman, that's the total of my comments at this time. I'm available for any questions.
Ms. Sullivan, I don't hear or see any. Thanks so much for your brief statement, and we appreciate you waiting to testify on this bill.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here in the room who would like to testify on behalf of SB 185? Anybody else online? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on SB 185. Wrap-up comments, Senator Wilikowski.
No, I have nothing, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
I did notice that the bill talks about if a person changes one of these electronic locations, they're supposed to make notification within by the next day. The fiscal note from the Department of Law talks about giving notice within 5 days. So there's an inconsistency between the bill and the fiscal note.
I can.
Senator Wilikowski looks like he has an answer.
It's when we first, for whatever reason, when the bill was first drafted, it was drafted as 5 days. And
we didn't see any reason to have it at 5 days, since currently when sex offenders change their addresses, they're required to notify within 1 day. So in the last committee, it was changed to 1 day, and I just think the fiscal note was never updated to reflect that. I don't think there's any additional cost, but I won't assume anything. If the DPS...
Ms. Carpinetti, want to come up and just shed what light you can on the 5 day versus 1 day aspect of the bill?
Sure. I apologize. My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I guess we just didn't update our fiscal note. We should have done so. But I don't think it would make any difference in, under those circumstances. I don't think it would make a difference in the fiscal note.
The workload won't change. It'll just move it up in time.
Sure.
Makes sense. Further questions from Ms. Carpinetti? Thanks for being here and waiting patiently through the hearing.
Thanks.
Let's go ahead and let, and just for the record, a violation of the failure to update your registration and your address would be a misdemeanor. Ms. Carpinetti? Yep.
Generally, yes.
Yep. It's the same as failing to register as a sex offender the way it is now.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and hold this bill over to the next hearing, and unless there's anything else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.